Tomorrow.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding.
This week we are talking about King John.
Another of the histories.
And not a very often performed play, so get ready.
Here is some Shakespeare abridged.
A messenger from France arrives in the court in England, and he says to King John, who's on the English throne, "Hey, you should not be the King of England. You should get off that throne and give it over to your nephew, Arthur." And the messenger is coming on behalf of King Philip of France, who says that Arthur, the nephew, is actually the rightful heir to the English throne, and he should be the king. And John goes, no, I'm the king. I'm not stepping down. So France says, well, then let's go to war about it. Now, while this is going on, the bastard who do we ever get his name?
His name changes. And I think that's why they choose to keep it the bastard.
In the
beginning, it's Philip Falconbridge.
That's right.
And it changes to Richard.
Richard at some point.
Dot, dot,
Plantagenet,
dot.
Actually. Yeah. He becomes a Plantagenet.
Right.
Okay. But the bastard, who, as he is called in the text, shows up with his younger brother into the court, and he and his brother are fighting over who gets to inherit the land that has been left to them in a will. And King John says the bastard has the right to the lands because he is the older brother, and a wife's offspring becomes a father's heir no matter who the actual father is. John's mother, Eleanor, so older woman, not his wife, just to be clear, because sometimes that gets a little confusing in the text, but Eleanor is John's mother, takes a liking to the bastard because it's rumored that his father was her other son and John's brother, Richard the Lionhearted. She proposes that the bastard leave his lands to his younger brother and join her armies instead and take on the name of Richard the Lionhearted. Or under the name Bastard of Richard the Lionhearted, really. And he says, yeah, that sounds great. So King John knights him, and that's that. Then over in France, across the channel, Philip and his forces are preparing to attack the English-held town of Angers, unless its citizens swear allegiance to Arthur and say that he should be King of England. So King John and his armies arrive. And Arthur's mother, Constance, and Eleanor are both there, and they are just bickering with each other. Arthur has claim to the English throne and is being supported by France and working with King Philip to get his throne back. And each of these kings are now there outside the city gates or the town walls of Angers, and they're asking the citizens who they support as the King of England, King John or King Arthur, basically forcing the citizens to choose between England and France. And the citizens are pretty smart, and they're like, no, we just support the rightful king, period. You guys get to decide who that is, and we'll support them. It's a very smart town. So then England and France, the two armies, go to battle with each other, but they're so evenly matched, neither one of them wins. So again, the town is like, well, whoop-de-doo, we just support the rightful king. Sorry, we're not opening our gates. So then the bastard suggests to King John and King Philip that they unite forces for a moment, destroy this disobedient town that's kind of flaunting their issues in their faces, and then fight each other later. And they go, oh, well, I think that's a good idea. So they call up to the citizens, hey, yo, we're gonna just fight together and destroy you because you're being kind of rude to us. And then the citizens come back with, hey, how about instead of us all dying and being burned and hacked to death, you marry Philip's son Louis to John's niece Blanche, and then everyone can have peace because you'll have a marriage uniting your two kingdoms and we'll all be good to go. And they say, okay, I think that's a great idea. Louis and John are pleased with this, and so they say, great, this helps strengthen John's ties to the throne, Louis gains English-held French territory, it's all good, and the bastard is kind of left standing there going, oh my god, how did you guys change your mind so quickly? This is ridiculous. All of that above scene, I fully imagine as a Monty Python sketch, and I encourage you to do the same, it's quite enjoyable, go read the play, you'll see what I mean. Constance, meanwhile, Arthur's mother, is very upset by this turn of events and blames King Philip for having abandoned his support for Arthur and his right to the English throne when he was presented with kind of a better chance to get at the English throne. And she has some great monologues, wailing and raving at him and sticking it to the man like a kick-ass woman does. Louis and Blanche are then married when Pandulf, an ambassador from the Pope of Rome, arrives. And he says, King John, you have been disobeying the Pope because you have not appointed or posted an archbishop. And King John goes, yeah, but your Pope's all the way in Rome. I'm in England. I don't really have to obey him, so screw you. And Pandulf goes, all right, well, you're excommunicated from the church then. And he then turns to Louis and says, you need to overthrow John on King John on the English throne because he's disobeying Rome and we don't like him anymore. And King Philip, whose family's just been tied to John's by marriage, is like, ah, crap, what do I do? Do I support my now brother-in-law situation? Do I obey the Church of Rome? I don't know. And Pandulf goes, well, your oaths and your ties to the church are older than this marriage that literally happened 5 minutes ago, so you should probably stick with the church or we're going to excommunicate you. And King Philip goes, okay, cool. I will break my ties with John. We're good to go. And then we have some battles. There's inconclusive battles. The English armies do eventually capture Arthur, who is English but is claiming rights to the throne and was working with France. So they've been captured. King John prepares to return home to England and he leaves his mother, Eleanor, who is Eleanor of Aquitaine, if anyone is into history like I am, in charge of English-held French territories over in France. He sends the bastard ahead to collect some money from the English monks and the English monasteries. And then King John pulls aside his friend Hubert and says, hey, look after Arthur when we are over in England. And by look after, I mean murder him. And Hubert's like, okay, I guess, I don't want to do that. Pandulf, meanwhile, the Pope's henchman, basically, is encouraging the French armies to fight and suggesting to Louis, the recently married to a daughter of England, that he should also claim the English throne because he married into a branch of the English royal family, so you should just go get that throne for yourself, too. Once again, when you play the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die. Meanwhile, Hubert is trying to kill Arthur, but Arthur is going, please don't. Have good morals and love me, and you're so kind and you're so brave and you're so wonderful, and just look how cute and innocent I am, and don't do it, Uncle Hubert, please. And Hubert's like, ah, damn it. Okay, I won't, but everyone has to think that you're dead, so leave. Then we go back to the throne room, and King John is meeting with his lords, and they are going, hey, Arthur, release him. He's a prisoner, and we want him released. We want to know that he's okay. And King John is like, yeah, he's fine. He's totally fine, guys. Toad's fine. I will release him, like, right now, immediately. Hubert then enters and goes, yep, Arthur's dead. I did it. And the lords believe that Arthur was assassinated, and they basically say, screw this noise, and they go and join Louis's army and are going to start fighting for France to get King John off of the English throne, because they're very unhappy that he committed murder under their noses. The bastard then returns from the monasteries, and he shares the news that people are not happy about King John coming and robbing the monasteries, and they are saying King John is going to have a serious downfall and not be king for much longer. And King John yells at Hubert, saying, you tricked me into murdering Arthur. I didn't want to do that. You're putting words in my mouth. I never told you to kill him. And Hubert goes, yeah, you did. You very specifically did. You wrote it down in black and white on a scroll. I did what you said, but really I didn't. Don't worry, he's alive. I got your back. And King John is super relieved. However, sadly, we come back to Arthur, and he's trying to flee England, and he's escaping from the castle, and he jumps off the castle wall to his death. And you wonder why they call it King's Landing. So they believe that he's been horrifically tortured and Hubert killed him in such a gross, awful way. And Hubert comes in and he's like, hey guys, guess what? Don't worry. Arthur's alive. I didn't kill him. Ha ha ha. And the lords go, oh, yeah, you did. His body's right freaking there. We see him. We see him bloody. And Hubert's going, no, no, he was alive when I left him. I promise. I didn't do this. You have to believe me. I stuck to my morals. I'm a good person. And the lords go, no. And they go off and decide they're going to fight with the French. Then we come back to King John, and he is striking a deal with Pandulf, and he says, I will honor the Pope if you can just go and get the French army to leave or surrender or anything so I can keep my throne. I will obey the Pope. And Pandulf's like, yeah, all right, I'll go give it a try. The bastard arrives to tell King John that all of his lords have departed to fight with King Philip. And King John goes, don't worry. I've made a deal with Pandulf and with Rome. We're good to go. The bastard wants to fight in the war, though, and in the battles. So he wants to fight the French. And so he goes, I'm going to lead your army, King John. Let me do it. Let me go
mess some people up.
I want to go slice and dice some Frenchies.
Make some fries of them French people.
There you go. King John's lords who left him swear allegiance to Louis, and Pandulf arrives with the news that King John has reconciled with Rome and with the Pope, and so he's trying to kind of sweet talk Louis away from attacking, but Louis says, no, you're not in charge of me, I'm gonna do what I want. So the bastard arrives to speak to Louis and threatens him with terrible destruction at the hands of the English army unless he leaves, and each side then prepares for battle. And then we have a huge battle. A French lord is wounded, and he tells the English lords that Louis planned to kill them if he won. So he says, you've got to go rejoin King John because the French can't be trusted. So they do. They go and rejoin King John, all the lords do, and Louis's reinforcements get lost at sea somehow. You know, a storm or whatever, an act of God, as it were.
Casual.
And so, Deus Ex Machina, no biggie.
Whatever.
And so Louis is thinking sad thoughts. He's probably going to lose now. Then the bastard meets up with Hubert and says King John's been poisoned by a monk at a monastery where he had been just kind of hanging out waiting to hear how the battle went. So the English lords and John's son, Prince Henry, run up to King John, and the bastard says to King John, you know, you lost a lot of your men. They drowned. You lost them in the battle, but we did some good things. And then King John dies from the monk's poison, and the bastard prepares to attack Louis, but the nobles report that Pandulf has instead brought a peace treaty from Louis, and so the bastard and the lords swear allegiance to Henry, who will take over the throne of England. And the bastard speaks of England and how it will never be taken by foreign conquerors unless it's first damaged by internal strife, because a house divided against itself cannot stand.
So good. We have a special guest here today. We have royalty.
Woo!
For the second time.
We have King John himself.
Hello, everyone.
Thanks for coming all this way.
Yeah.
To speak with us.
Oh, I was just going to say, that this whole play, if that's what you want to call it, is extremely slanderous towards me. I feel very, very hurt by what Shakespeare has written about
really?
Me.
Really?
Mm.
Extremely. I mean, first of all, he's got me all wrong. I led those troops into combat, I swear.
Mm. Ah.
And I single-handedly feel like I pushed the French back. And this war really was just about getting rid of French lands. I wanted to get the dirty French lands out of England. That's what happened.
So you achieved what you set out to achieve.
Which yes.
When you were cowardly making a treaty as opposed to finishing a battle.
Cowardly isn't exactly the word I would use. I'm a lion. I don't know if you know this or not. Have you seen Robin Hood by that man Walt Disney?
Yes.
I was a lion.
You are a literal lion. That's true.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
King John does come up in a lot of the Robin Hood tales as like, the evil king.
Oh, Robin Hood, that bastard. Oh, sorry. Sorry. No offense to bastards. My best friend was a bastard.
Well, interesting. Many have actually said that this take on King John is one of the more flattering takes. So Shakespeare actually kind of gave you some little, like, nudges and stuff, because he was a big fan of you because you sort of stood up to the Catholic regimen that was trying to control the monarchy.
Absolutely. I mean, you probably don't have to deal with this in this whole modern world of yours, but it's really irritating when another country or papacy, if you will, interacts with the workings of a nation that isn't with them. It would be like if some country on the other side of the world was intervening in an election of yours or something.
Yeah, I can't imagine that at all.
It's extremely frustrating.
Yeah, I can empathize with that, for real.
Absolutely.
For sure.
That was actually one of the first things that I wrote down in my notes, was speaking out against the Pope. Was this more likely to be part of the politics of the time the play was written? And it seems to be what you're saying. It kind of was, but it more informed the representation of yourself, King John.
Absolutely. A lot of people were really worried about my excommunication, but me, I'm not worried, okay? It was great to be excommunicated. Two of my best friends were excommunicated. Emperor Otto. Maybe you've heard of him. Maybe you haven't. I don't know. He was excommunicated.
So all the cool kids were doing it.
Well, just me and those two.
Oh, yeah. Everyone else sucks.
If Emperor Otto jumped off a castle wall.
So, for your question, I believe at the time it was being performed, I did a little bit of research, but you understand how bad I am at understanding history. I believe Elizabeth was doing some things that were kind of against Catholicism and were a little bit, like, supporting the Protestant...
Well, the Church of England.
Okay.
She was the...
Go ahead.
Going with the Church of England rather than the Catholics. That was a big war previous to her coming to the throne.
Cool. So, Shakespeare put...
He highlighted it a little
exactly,
more.
Because people would have understood what that was like at the time.
Right.
And this was based off of another play that had been written, The Troublesome Reign of John, King of England, which was an anonymous play that was later attributed to Shakespeare, but no one really thinks, historians don't believe Shakespeare wrote the original, but he took the original and was like, all right, now I'm going to write my Shakespeare play of it. So one thing also that is crazy about this play is it's one of two plays that's written fully in verse. So there's no prose anywhere in this play, which is kind of crazy. For, like, such a, like, lax play. Because a lot of his histories are very formal and, like, either all war or all intrigue. And this is more character-based than the other ones.
What's the other one that's all in verse?
Richard II, which we haven't read yet.
My next note was actually the calfskin joke. Because that's another Monty Python-type scene.
So Austria is wearing a lion skin that he took from Richard I after he slew him. He is wearing the bastard's father's, like, prized possession. So Eleanor, who is King John's mother, this is when they all meet on the battlefield and basically, like, have a rap battle.
Totes.
And the women are there, too, so they're not fighting. They're just talking and, like, throwing shade. And Eleanor gives this huge paragraph, and at the end she's like, you shouldn't be wearing a lion skin at all. You should be wearing a calf skin. And Austria is like, oh, man, if you were a dude, those would be fighting words, and I would fight you. And immediately the bastard said, you should be wearing a calfskin. And Austria's like, oh, but I'm not going to fight you, but I could, because you're saying those fighting words. So that whole joke is the bastard being like, ante up. Ante up, bro. Let's go. Let's go. That's why he keeps saying it, because Austria keeps avoiding it.
Ah.
It's characterizing the retreating French. That's what he's doing. He's talking about how French, the people who hang out with them, are cowards. And that is my favorite moment.
And I do have to just say, though, during this whole event, when he kept saying this stuff about the calfskin, it was getting really irritating. We were trying to actually have a civil discussion, and there he is just popping his head in between your arms and just chiming on in. And it's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Sir Richard. Whom I gave you the name of. But the grown-ups are talking here, okay? We don't need to keep this calfskin thing going.
So you felt very much like he was a small boy that you had to look after and be like, all right, calm down, calm down.
If I had a son... Sorry, I do. Henry III, rest in peace. But Sir Richard, needed to be a little more adult about the whole situation.
That's how I read the scene, as almost like a jester or a clown just not letting a joke go and just continuing to pop in and be like, you should wear a caskin.
Yeah, I definitely...
You should wear it! I said!
I definitely feel like it does show that he was just made royalty. Like, this was just a country dude who was with his brother and was clearly very smart and, like, quick of tongue. But he became a knight, like, a week ago and was like, haha, now I'm gonna hang out with all these royal guys. I'm just gonna fight this guy. And everyone's like, listen, dude, we're trying to talk. Calm down.
Right.
And, might I say, a few days afterwards, he just starts carrying this severed head around with him wherever he went. It was really disgusting. I don't know if you've smelled a severed head before, but never. It is not pleasant. It's very, very pungent.
I've heard that when you cut into a skull, though, it smells like Cool Ranch Doritos.
I'm never eating Cool Ranch Doritos again.
You're welcome, America.
Is this the origin of Bell, Book, and Candle, as a quote?
No.
It's not.
Did you know what that is in reference to?
No, I don't.
Interesting. I'm going to teach you about religion for a second.
Teach me, teacher.
So I only know this because of my liner notes. I didn't know this either. But it's talking about excommunication. They do a ritual, almost like a spell, where they have like a candle and a book and something else. And like the last part of being excommunicated is they close the book and blow out the candle. And then that person's excommunicated. It was in reference to an actual thing.
Understood.
Where have you heard it?
It's just in the ether of the world.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
Really? No. Bell, Book, and Candle? I've heard it.
Someone said it to me once.
Yes?
When you were excommunicated?
When I was excommunicated.
There you go! This play is actually pretty quick and pretty straightforward, and it's an enjoyable read. It really clips along.
I love this one.
Is the bind up your hairs exchange?
I learned it too.
It's just such a great scene. And as a woman with longer hair, that is 100% what you do with it. You put it up when
it's business time.
It's business time and you're gonna work out or you're gonna run or you're gonna kick some booty. And you take it down when you're like, whatever, it's fine. I'm just going to relax, drink my tea.
It actually goes a little deeper than that.
Yeah.
In a bunch of Latin translations.
Yeah.
From my Latin years. Mm-hmm. But like in the Aeneid and in the Metamorphoses and stuff, when people are so distraught, they talk about their hair being unbound because it was just normal for women to have their hair like up and done up. And so like when it's loose like that, it's like, oh, they're coming undone just like their hair.
And tearing their hair and beating their breasts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Got it.
And that's what that says. She's like, I tore my hair out because I was hoping to free the bonds of my child. But if my child can't be free, I'm going to put my hair back up. And then she's like, nope, my grief's too great. I'm pulling my hair back down. Forget it. This is crazy. Yeah.
It's great. It's great, great.
Yeah, Constance is a great role. And she, like, disappears. It's super weird. I wonder if there's some other role that actor ends up playing in the second half. I was trying to think who it could be. I don't really think there's any new characters, though.
No. Maybe one Henry, of the lords.
Maybe Henry III, but that's
maybe.
It. But, like, she's an older woman, so probably would have been an older
girl. Yeah, I'd love to talk about Arthur.
Yeah.
Because also, just knowing, like, Robin Hood and King John and things like that, it also makes you think of King Arthur and the Arthurian legends.
Is King Arthur real?
There's hot debate on that subject. It is not. There's no historical facts yet proving that, but it is possible that he was real. Wizards like Merlin are not.
What?
I'm so sorry. But Arthur in this play is a historical figure. And what was his claim to the throne?
So, the way the family goes, because I looked up a lot when I first started reading this play again, it's Eleanor had two sons, and her son that died, which I think is Richard, right?
She had three sons, I think. Or great. She does in The Lion in Winter, which is a great play that I'm going to talk about in a bit.
Arthur was one of her son's son. And that son was king. So he died, and the throne should have gone to Arthur, but instead it went to the next eldest brother, because that's what his will said.
Ah,
and
okay,
so
fair enough.
That's why they were saying that. And then Shakespeare also brings up doubt to whether King John's father was the same as the other king's father.
Ah.
Eleanor of Aquitaine
might have been sleeping around a bit.
Right, and she literally pulls John aside in that first scene and is like, you know that you're not the most legitimate, too. And he's like, we don't really know that. Let's just keep going with the fact that I'm the king. Let's do that instead.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they're saying that Arthur has a better claim to the throne, because technically he was the lineage.
Got it.
And this guy might be a bastard.
Well,
you,
I just want to say...
You might be a bastard, I should say.
No. I had the most legitimate claim to the throne because I had the throne. I feel like that's an important thing to establish.
Mm-hmm.
This little punk Arthur comes up and starts saying, he doesn't even say it. He has someone else say that he has the claim to the throne.
Right, right.
I'm glad he fell off that wall. Or jumped?
Or was pushed.
Oh, see, I was under the impression in this play that that kid jumps.
Oh, me too.
Oh, good.
I think he jumps.
When you said it, you didn't.
No, I think he jumps.
Which
I think is the saddest part of it. Because the scene between him and Hubert is heartbreaking. Why death by hot rods in the eyeballs?
Okay, that I can explain. Okay. Have you ever been stabbed in the eyes? Have you ever poked yourself in the eye?
No, but
yes!
I have.
One time I was stocking pastries at the coffee shop I worked at 4 in the gosh darn morning, and I had an open plastic pastry box in front of me, and I was reaching through to put a scone down, and I ran my eye into the corner of that open pastry box, and I fainted because it hurt so bad. So yes, go on.
So, I've never poked myself in the eye. I did get hand sanitizer in the eye once, which burns like a mother.
I got jalapeno bitters.
Well, if you think that burns, let me tell you. Picture this. You have a giant pitchfork. Fiery hot. What kind of image does that remind you of? Some
the
kind
devil.
Of old devil? Exactly. Oh. And the eyes are the portal to the soul, are they not?
Oh.
Oh.
You have some sick symbolism.
Oh.
Thank you very much. See, King John is very clever.
But
also,
then you felt bad and you kind of changed your mind. But what did you want to say? Go on.
I did feel bad. I felt bad once I knew that there was consequences to my actions.
Ah.
Speaking of Robin Hood, some people think that the bastard might have been a little bit of a stand-in for Robin Hood, but Shakespeare knew he couldn't put Robin Hood himself in the play because it would immediately make King John a villain.
True, true.
As opposed to, like, a sort of balance where he has some good moments and some bad moments.
Right. Mm.
Even though you seem to think he did a lot of bad moments. But, so that could sort of explain the character of the bastard and why he is kind of, like, amongst the nobles, but not a noble.
Yeah.
And, like, wants to fight all the time. It doesn't want to do, like, peace treaty stuff.
You ever?
And he says that whole speech about commodity and being, like, everyone only wants commodity, meaning what
right.
they want for themselves, or money.
Right.
And now I'm just going to go for commodity.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm going to do.
Oh, I did want to ask this. I'm trying to put it back together because I wasn't there when it happened. People were telling me they heard Arthur talking after he jumped, but was it before he hit the rocks and died, or was he talking while falling? Or?
I think it was after. I think, as far as I remember, it was after he hit the ground and had a few final phrases and then passed from blood loss and
because
trauma.
I'm not sure. I've seen it plenty of times. People jumping up walls and dying.
Fair enough.
When you hit
Fair
the
enough.
Ground, you usually are just, that's it. So, how did he talk? This is really bothering me.
I would say, in all honesty, he likely didn't only screamed on the way down and then was silent forever. In the play, though, we have a little more creative license, and he talks after he hits the ground because staging is better for that. He probably didn't say any of those things in actuality.
So I've never seen this play. when he jumps, do you think he just jumps off just the stage onto, like, the 3 feet below?
It's a great question. I was thinking about it. And
how you would stage it?
Right. Because I was thinking about the globe, and the way the globe's set up is there's the stage, and then there's, like, a place where you can stand up above. There's trap doors, and then there's a bunch of entrances through the audience from the sides. What I think they would have either done is have him up top on the high part and either thrown a dummy down, but I think it would have been too funny, so I don't think they did that. Or, like, show him jump off the back of it and then, like, roll his quote-unquote body out onto the stage. Mm. So, like, maybe either have the real guy up there jump back and have a stunt double roll out onto stage immediately.
Mm.
Or vice versa, have a stunt double up top, him be like, all right, guess I'm going to my death, and jump, and then have him roll out.
Ground be soft.
Oh, my God.
I was like, don't do it! Like, oh, God, it broke my heart.
It's not worth it. I know. He's a better talker than Clarence.
Yeah. Yeah.
He convinces them not to kill him. Clarence tries, and those murderers murder him in Richard III.
Yeah.
It's almost the same scene. Oh, we were talking about, we didn't talk about this on here, that Victorian audiences loved this play because it's so moral.
Yeah, the morality of it is really strong. People have a lot of good morals in this play.
And, like, when they don't, they get punished for it almost immediately.
Yeah.
Even the Dauphin, once he chooses to be selfish, when the Pope, or whatever that guy's title is, comes to him. Gandalf.
Pandalf.
Sorry, Pandalf comes to him and says, hey, all right, no more war. Thank you for working with the side of God. God is happy with King John now, so go home. And he's like, no, I want the throne now. Forget you, Pope. I'm going over here. That's when he loses. Almost immediately.
Yeah. There are not a lot of modern day adaptations of this that I know of, because it is so tied into the historical things.
And it's almost never done.
No.
Which I find really weird.
It's a great play. There's some great scenes and great characters. Mm-hmm. I would totally stage it. I would totally go see it.
Mm-hmm.
What I would also say, I was going to bring up The Lion in Winter. That is a great play. There's not a modern day adaptation of it, but there's a great film version of it that if you have not seen, you should.
I don't know anything about The Lion in Winter.
It's a great play. Lots of political intrigue, sexual intrigue. It's Eleanor of Aquitaine and her husband, Henry II, and her sons, John, Richard, and Geoffrey, and Philip is there, of France. So when I was reading this, actually, I was like, is this Shakespeare's version of The Lion in Winter? It's not. The Lion in Winter takes place previously to this. This is kind of the sequel to it.
But was written afterwards, right?
But was written afterwards, of course. Yeah, it's a modern day play.
I thought it was a classic.
No, it was written... The film is from the 60s. I think it was written...
The play is also from the 60s.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I just wanted to bring that up because there aren't really any modern-day adaptations, but if you want a more modern take on similar political themes of the time, The Lion in Winter is a great play to check out, and it's also a fantastic film.
And there are a lot of themes of this, like we say all the time, in
Game of Thrones.
My friend, 100%. When I first read this play, was like, oh, you'll love it. Because I was reading it because I'd heard a Constance monologue at the program I did. And was like, I gotta see what this is about.
Yeah, and Constance is a great character.
And my friend who's a dramaturg was like, oh, you'll love it because the bastard is just like Tyrion Lannister. He's very smart and no one takes him seriously or gives him a chance.
You know what's interesting? I never thought about it until just this moment, but Tyrion Lannister is also very similar to Robin Hood.
Huh? Yeah.
Right? If you think about it.
Except he comes from privilege.
Yeah, but his morals, I think, are similar to Robin Hood.
No.
Not his, but his...
Because now he's all about, like, just doing the right thing, as opposed to, like, stealing for the betterment of the poor people.
Well, Tyrion gives a lot of his money to whores, which are poor, so in a way, he is giving money to the poor. Very
you
frequently.
You know what? I like you, King John.
You're
on my side now. I like it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Maybe you've heard of some of my works before. Have you ever read something that's called, oh, I don't know, the Magna Carta?
Yeah, he wrote the Magna Carta.
Oh, it's pretty great. Actually, I have. One of my ancestors signed it, actually.
6 degrees of separation.
From King John. Everyone.
From King John.
Right.
Well, if you know anything about the history of the Magna Carta, you would know that almost everyone hated it. Many, many times people tried to reenact the Magna Carta only to dash it away or change it. It was very, very unpopular amongst the elite. Mm. Because it made it so we couldn't take money from the poor, really. It was quite frustrating.
Ah.
I had to sign it. It wasn't like I wanted to.
Mm. Ah. You were, like, pushed into it.
Okay, his name is Pope Innocent III, but he was far from innocent, all right? He was very difficult to work with, the man.
Got it. So the theme of being pushed around by the papacy was correct a little bit in this Shakespeare play.
Pushed around is not the word I would use, but if anything, I pushed him out of England.
Mm, got it. So in the end, you won.
Well, I mean, I did die.
You did die.
But that was only because I drank some wicked beer.
That's good.
Really good. Have you had Abbey brewed beer?
Oh, man. Yes.
You have?
Have you ever poked yourself in the eye? Yes, I have.
I have. No, there's a great brewery called Abbey. I bought it. It's great.
Get out, Glenn. No one wants you.
That's real. I'm just answering questions, honestly, here.
Well, okay, just put yourself in my shoes. You're feeling pretty sick. You go to an abbey to rest up. People are dying all around you because there's some kind of war going on or something, whatever. And the abbey man? What are you... The abbot?
The abbot.
He offers me some medicine. The brother, thank you. He says, Father... Because I'm like a father figure to everyone in England. And he says, I'm so sorry that you're under the weather. We just brewed this new beer. We've taken...
We call it Kingslayer.
I'm like, Kingslayer? That sounds metal delicious. As hell.
Metal as hell.
Because back in the day, metal was the most popular music. He offers me this beer, and craft brewing had really started to kick off at this time in England. It took a few extra centuries for it to kick off here in the Americas, which we did not know existed until 1492.
Right. Plus, you were close to India already, so the IPA is everywhere.
Exactly. So they had been frequently aging their beer in bourbon barrels, you know, as people are doing now. But he offered me one that was aged in a poison barrel.
Oh, how unfortunate.
It was, in retrospect, not my shining moment. Not my best moment.
That's fair. Can you explain to me how one plays metal music?
You sing about poking people in the eyes with razor or with hot irons.
Uh-huh.
Or jumping off of castle walls.
And screaming.
The more I think about it, Arthur was pretty metal.
Well, on that note, I think we should read a scene.
So we're going to read a scene from Act 3, Scene 2. And this is sort of in the middle of their second war of the play, I want to say. So after the marriage and they decide to fight each other again, England is doing really well at this point in the war. And we're at King John's camp, and he sends the bastard ahead to England to gather more money to help pay for the war from all the abbeys and everything. And he's with the rest of his crew there, and they've captured Arthur, the young boy. And he pulls Hubert aside and sort of casually tells him to murder Arthur, and that's what we're going to see right now.
Good friend, thou hast no cause to say so yet, but thou shalt have. And creep time never so slow, yet it shall come for me to do thee good. I had a thing to say, but let it go. The sun is in heaven, and the proud day, attended with the pleasures of the world, is all too wanton and too full of gods to give me audience. If the midnight bell did with his iron tongue and brazen mouth sound on into it the drowsy race of night, if this same were a churchyard where we stand, and thou possessed with a thousand wrongs, or if that surely spirit, melancholy, had baked thy blood and made it heavy, thick, which else runs tickling up and down the veins, making that idiot, laughter, keep men's eyes and strain their cheeks to idle merriment, a passion hateful to my purposes. Or if thou that couldst see me without eyes,
Hear me without thine ears, and make reply without a tongue. Use conceit alone, without eyes, ears, and harmful sound of words. Then, in despite of broad-eyed, watchful day, I would into thy bosom pour my thoughts. But I will not. Yet I love thee well, and by my troth I think thou'st loved me well.
So well, that what you bid me undertake, though that my death were adjunct to my act by heaven, I would do it.
Do I not know thou wouldn'st? Good Hubert, Hubert, Hubert. Thrown thine eyes on young, young boy. I'll tell thee what, my friend. He is a very serpent in my way. And whereso this foot of mine doth tread, he lies before me. Dost thou understand me? Thou art his keeper.
And I'll keep him so, that he shall not offend your majesty.
Death.
My lord?
A grave.
He shall not live. Yeah.
And then later when he's like, I told you to do it, but I didn't tell you out loud, and that should have told you that I felt guilty about it. It's like, all right, King John. Way to backtrack.
Slow your roll.
Well, I just want to point out, did you catch the little dig there that I made at the Catholic Church? Thou art his keeper. Quoting the Bible.
Oh, is that a Bible thing?
The sister's keeper and brother's keeper. That, like. I had to read the Bible once. Don't recommend it.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to have you, King John.
Some time out of your afterlife.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and binge watch the other show that everyone's talking about. Have you seen Westworld?
Oh my god, it's so
great. You're going to love it.
Thanks. I don't know who's a robot yet or what those are.
Fair enough.
Pretty metal.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Deuces peasants.
Love. Also because I hate you.
Same thing.
Because you ruined my life.
I know.
In the best way.
No, stop, we can't.
We're not alone. We can't fuck so much.
We're not actually in love. She has a boyfriend. She has a boyfriend, America. Okay, go ahead.